I'm not pulling in my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another Drive to Work at Home Edition. So today we're talking about the art direction of Bloomboro with Zach Stella, the art director for the set. Say, hey, Zach.
Hello, hello.
Okay, so let's start from the very beginning. How early does the art director get assigned to like to a world? Like how early did you know you were doing Bloomboro?
Probably 2 years ahead of the actual set release.
Were we like, do you get assigned during like exploratory world building? Or does it happen after that?
We kind of get assigned for exploratory. Okay. Yeah, it's pretty early on.
Okay, so we're doing Animal World. What were your first thoughts? Like, what as an art, from an art director standpoint, what matters? Like, what were you thinking about?
So, out of the whole team, I'm probably the one that's like the most nature based. So, I was probably the right person that they put on this one. More importantly than small animals, it was like the small portion of it. It was like this will be the first time that we were doing like small scale or just like a totally different scale from a normal magic set. So there was large consideration right out of the gate of like how we were going to tackle things at like a completely different scale than we would normally see. This is also just a very nature-based set. So like there's a lot of consideration into how to make everything not look like it was necessarily like a green card. Mm-hmm. Even though technically like it is very green.
So another important thing I know that I've heard you talk about is we want to, like, the whole idea of the set is we're capturing animals, but also, like, we want to both have them actually feel like animals, but also fill the role. I mean, you know, they're kind of our main characters. So, like, you have dual purpose in trying to make the set look right.
Yeah, we put a lot of time and effort into trying to get, like, the anatomy sheets. And I had April Prime and Aurora Folney on my push, and they're both known for, like, or April especially is known for, like, small animal character concepts. So I wanted to make sure that like both the anatomy was looking correct, just like as if it was like an animal that just basically stood up and put on clothes. That was kind of the goal. Especially like facial features, like animals can go cartoon really fast if you don't get like the proper amount of like musculature and how much they can smile and like how much white is in their eyes, et cetera, et cetera.
And so what did you do to make sure that the animals felt like the animals they needed to be?
Just a lot of iteration, a lot of character studies. We made these like sheets on the concept push where like we had little like green check marks and red X's for like, this is wide enough. This is too wide on the mouth and whatnot. Like it was a lot of tweaking as we were going along.
Yeah. One of the things so the audience may or may not know is we make what we call a world guide, which is, you know, we spend a lot of time getting visuals so that the artists have something to look at so that there's, because we want all the artists to be drawing something where it looks like the same world and not vary greatly from artist to artist.
Yeah, correct. It's a 3-week sprint. We bring in like a small specialized team. In this case, it's like usually five artists plus our four in-house actually.
Okay, so I'm going to walk through the animals a little bit. And I want to talk about the challenge of the illustration of each of these animal types.
Sure.
And I'm going to go in Wooberg order because that's the order I like to go in. So we'll start with White Blue, which is the birds. What was the challenge of capturing the birds?
Birds, it was definitely emotion. It's very hard for a beak to emote anything, and they don't really have eyebrows. So it was like, how much exactly do we want their face to move around where they can actually still feel like characters and not just like literal birds with clothes on? So the visual goals here were like, things that would also make them exciting on cards. So we wanted like lots of motion showing in their costuming where they've got like little fluttery ribbons and flashes of color. I know like I've spoken about this like multiple times, but I wanted this set to come across as if you're going to the zoo and you're getting like a collection of animal types, and birds was one of those easier ones where like it's very easy to change their shapes and colors where they look very distinct on each of the cards.
And I know that, like, for each, when you you do what's called an art direction. Like, you say to the artist, here's what I want you to draw. And for each bird, like, you specify the actual bird it was, right?
I did, yeah. There was a lot of consideration for the size too, because birds are like very varied in size. So I was a stickler for like making sure that we didn't end up with like tiny hummingbirds on like 4/4s and stuff like that.
And I'm just curious, like, how did you figure out what bird made sense for what card?
I think I just have like an innate knowledge of, I just have a very good visual dictionary, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like some of it's just kind of knowing what colors are appropriate where, and just like sizing based on the power and toughness. And thankfully, this was one of those sets that like that didn't seem to change around in the game design end too much, like super late.
Yeah, and it's funny because one of the things, once art is done, like we don't want to change, like design is kind of locked in on certain things once the art is done. And in this set, like, oh, the birds are certain sizes, so I got certain birds, so don't, please don't change the size on me. So that's very interesting.
Yeah. I think there might have been like maybe one or two that we just rearranged at the last minute as we had to.
Okay, let's move on to the next one. So blue black is the rats. What was the challenge of visually bringing the rats to life?
For me, rats have been done so many times. It was like, how, and they're all usually in blue and black. So like how, or maybe they haven't actually been blue
mostly
before.
Black. Yeah. Rats are mostly black, but historically.
Yeah. So, it was like, how do you do them interesting this time around? I know they're like literal rats this time, but, yeah, they needed like an interesting hook. So we came up with this like insect part thing, like where they're kind of like bug worshippers when they're living in this tidal marsh. It was a great way to give them like extra pops of color and like just make them look kind of more aggressive because they can get these like cool beetle shapes in their armor and stuff like that. I actually fell in love with the rats. I did not think that they were going to be like one of my favorites, but anytime you combine something with like giant ride-on bugs and stuff like that, it becomes super fun real fast.
Yeah, I've heard from a lot of rats, actually, if you have rats as pets, they're supposed to be very, very nice animals, and that they're much maligned by pop culture. And so I think they're a lot nicer than people think of them as rats being. So,
yeah, that was one of those animals, too, that like I tried very hard to pair artists with animals that they had as pets. Mm-hmm. So like I knew a bunch of people that had rats.
Oh, that's cool that you pick animals, artists that actually had rats. That's very cool.
Yeah, it was easy for the rabbits. It was easy for the rats. And then I actually had an artist that had ferrets, too. So, like, she was the natural fit to do anything with Cruel Claw, too.
Oh, that's it. That's interesting. Okay, so the next one is lizards. Any artists have lizards?
I forgot to ask about the lizards. The lizards were fun this time because they're not actually native to Valley. So this was another one that, like the birds, I could vary their shapes a lot because I could go outside of what is normally found in like an Eastern European or like Eastern American biome. Again, like super varied in color and shape. And in this case, they got like this tile motif, and I love to put like masks on characters too. It immediately makes something feel more like a magic card when they get like a cool aggressive mask. So I definitely leaned into it here on like the lizards and the rats had masks too.
Okay. Well, that's super cool. Okay. Now we get on to red green, which is the raccoons.
Raccoons, I forget how early along it came about that I was like, oh, what if we did like this sort of thing with their weapons where it was like if a tree trunk grows around a bicycle, where they have these like wooden weapons that they would basically just like store their stuff in. Mm-hmm. Where you get like bark just growing around other objects. I think it was probably like early on that we figured out that their mechanic was kind of like junk based. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to make sure that they had like a way to carry it around with them. And Neil came up with this this like story motif of them like being travelers. So we also wanted to make sure they had like a way to carry all that stuff.
Now, the other thing that we've talked about scope, like raccoons are a little bit bigger than some of the other animals. Like how important was that in like how much of a challenge was that?
It wasn't so much a challenge if they were on a card by themselves. We definitely have a card where it's like a raccoon and a mouse together. So, when it's like big animal, little animal, you want to make sure that they're still like kind of going to read at the, pretty clearly at card size when it's, you know, shrunk down to an inch box of art. The other thing I super love about the raccoons is their homes are basically like, we leaned very hard into the cottagecore on the raccoon houses because every part of the raccoon house is basically built into the trees.
Mm. Super cool. Okay, next up, green, white. We have the rabbits.
So rabbits, I used to have a rabbit, so I had a soft spot for bunnies. This was another one, too, that, like, even though I had a rabbit, I wasn't sure they were going to be my favorite, but as we were working on them and we kind of, like, fell on that visual motif of, like, making all of their weapons basically just, like, metalized vegetables and making their costuming out of, like, just, like, plant coloring that you normally see in a garden, they came together super easily, and they're very striking on cards. Mm-hmm. Also, rabbits, when they get aggressive, they look terrifying.
the rabbits are super cute. I like how the rabbits came out. Okay, let's move on to white-black. What was the challenge in making the bats?
Bats was the one that I thought out of the gate was going to be my absolute favorite, just because they feel the most, like, magic-y to me, like, right away. And they were able to let me lean into, like, kind of like the 1980s fantasy or, like, sort of, like, weird Muppety vibes just based off of their, like, big mouths and huge ears and big eyes. Like, they just have over-exaggerated features that, like, make for a very, they're just very animal. Like, they look very animal. I think the challenge here was, like, how do we build their homes in such a way that it steers clear of what we're doing with the birds and some of the other flying animals in the set, or just like the tree-based ones? Like, how do we keep them off the squirrel homes too, especially because like the bats are kind of gothic by nature and like the squirrels were already doing kind of a goth thing for this set.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing is I had to give them extra fingers. They had to look like magic casters. So, like, rather than having them carry their weapons and cast their magic with their feet, we had to make sure that they had a way to cast magic. So giving them extra fingers and changing their anatomy was definitely something we had to do for the bats.
Were there other animals that you changed the anatomy, or were bats the one you did the most anatomy changing?
Bats were definitely, they went the hardest on the anatomy changes. And I'm not even really sure we did do much for the other animals. I tried to do it with the raccoons because there's really only one kind of raccoon, so to make them look varied on cards, I tried some stuff where I was, like, changing the striping on their tails and stuff like that they wouldn't normally have in nature. Some of that didn't really come through in the final card set.
Okay, so next up is blue, red, the otters. What was the challenge of illustrating the otters?
Everybody loves otters. I knew this one was going to be a hit. We did this thing where, like, otters normally have these, like, natural pockets in their skin that they normally, like, put pebbles and things in that they love. So, and also as a red creature here, like, we knew they were going to be, like, playing around with lightning and magical elements. So we did this, like, let's capture lightning in a bottle literally gag with them where, like, they actually have, like, pockets and, like, things on their clothes that are built in for storing spells for later.
Yeah, we knew early on that they were going to be one of the spellcasters, you know, being in blue-red, so.
Yeah, in the set, too, like, we did this really cool thing with their houses being these, like, boats that would link together as if it was, like, you know, when you see, like, otters holding hands. So it's, like, their boats can actually, like, link together where they make these, like, little circular communities. And they have their own sport, too.
Yes. So now, for example, let's talk about otter ball for a second. How much of a visual challenge is it to, like, okay, there's this sport they play?
Sports in Magic the Gathering have always been, like, kind of at odds. Like, it immediately reads as, like, a different game. You know, it's like, it doesn't really lend itself well to, like, looking like things are going into combat if they're decked out in, like, team gear, basically. So we tried to make sure that, like, any of the otter ball costuming that we came up with had to look like they could still join up in an adventuring party and still, like, do the aggressive thing with all the other animals if they needed to when they're fighting calamity beasts.
Okay. Next up is Black Green, the squirrels. What were the challenge of squirrels?
Well, this is the first time we're going hard on, like, squirrel necromancer. Like, I know squirrels have been in Black Green previously, but this was, like, the first time we could go, like, really balls to the wall with the black elements of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, like, I wanted to come up with this, like, motif where, like, the green squirrels were more, like, leaf skeletons in their costuming, and the black squirrels were more actual skeletons in their costuming, and then you can get, like, a cool blend over each of them. Yeah, and April just, like, nailed the design on the concept push, like, right away, but, like, she landed on something I like to call dark elegance, where they look very gothic, but just very, very cool and elegant. So she, like, put these bones, like, running up and down their tails, and, like, we have this, like, quilt motif in the set. She was able to, like, quilt their costuming in such a way that it looked, like, grand and regal.
Yeah, it's interesting as we walk through the animals that there actually was two goals. One was, what does the animal visually look like? And the second is, what's the costuming? Because one of the big things on the genre we're playing with is the animals dressed, you know, in clothing, because that's key to the genre.
Yeah, and it was something I had to definitely hammer home with the artist, too, is, like, squirrels actually only have, like, four fingers. So that was, like, one of the things I was catching all the time. They were trying to give them extra fingers all the time.
So bats get extra fingers, but squirrels, no, they don't get extra fingers.
No, squirrels, they need to go back down to four fingers.
Okay, so now we get to Red White, which we're talking about genre influence, probably one of the most influential things of the genre is the mice, our protagonists in many of this type of story.
Yeah, so Tiny Hero was like the top line for mice. Just outside of Mabel, I wanted to make sure that, like, all the mice have this, like, small hero thing going on where you can kind of get a sense that they're kind of, like, even though there's 10 animal types in this set, they're definitely, like, the focus. So they got, like, little capelets made out of leaves that could, like, flutter in the wind and help them look extra heroic. And I wanted, like, fencing decorum just to make sure that they sort of read, like, on the light side of heroism. So they all have, like, these little weapons that are based off of, like, twigs and things that are sharpened into little poking sticks.
Yeah,
one of the ones that, like, you know, like, as a kid when you go into the woods and you pick up, like, a really cool stick and you're like, this is the sword. Like, that's kind of the vibe with the mice.
One of the things when I had Neil on to talk through world building, and he talked about how one of the very first images to come in is the little mouse against the wolf. And
yeah, Ryan Pankow's piece, he just, like, totally nailed the vibe of the set in one go.
Yeah, and how much did that influence, you know, like, it's the image we showed people first. It very much sort of sets the tone for everything. It's interesting to me how early it happened.
Yeah, big and small was, like, a major theme for the set. Yeah, I wanted to make sure that we got one image in at least very early on that kind of did the thing, and that's the one. Chris Ron did a mouse later on, too, that's, like, he's got a flaming sword that he's holding over his head, and, like, there's basically, like, a big snake coiling around. You don't even see the snake's head. You just see, like, coils around this mouse in the dark.
Yeah.
And that one kind of, like, also does just, it nails that, like, tiny heroism, the danger level that you normally want to see in a magic set, stuff like that.
Okay, so finally, animal-wise, we have Green Blue, which is our frogs. What's the challenge of the frogs?
Frogs? So, like, Neil wanted to push them into, like, augurism, where, like, they were kind of, like, they could always see the future, and it was making them super depressed. And that doesn't always, like, lend itself well to making fun pieces of art. But I think they ended up being, like, a fan favorite for most of the people in the building that was coming by and seeing the frogs on the wall. There's just something, like, super relatable about the personality that was coming through in the frogs. I just wanted to make sure that on top of, like, whatever they're doing with their auger stuff, that they could still have some, like, cool visual motifing to them. So, and it was also just a great way to sell, like, the small scale of the set. So, like, all of their weapons have these, like, really awesome, like, magical splits in them where they're, like, connected by viscous water and stuff. And it was just a great way to, like, sell small scale when you could see these, like, mega water droplets that are a little bit bigger than them.
Okay, so we've talked about the animals. So let's talk a little bit about who the animals, the other side, the Calamity Beasts. So what were the challenges of designing the visually designing the Calamity Beasts?
So Calamity Beasts had to be obviously like much bigger than the animal folk, and they had to be like very potent looking. Especially when you're decking out animals in armor, they have to look in sharp contrast. And they weren't going anthropomorphic, so we had to do something where like we were doing basically doing regular animals, but had to make them look interesting in some way. So we paired them off with like elemental magical effects like pretty early on. And I forget if they even had that built into their creature type that they started out as elemental. I think that came after the fact.
That happened when we handed off the set from Vision Design. They were called Predators at the time. None of the elemental, that all came during set design later on.
Elemental
got added. So
That was a thing too. It was like, yeah, they all kind of started as Predators. And I was like, I don't know if we have necessarily enough like Predators that are native to like the Eastern United States that we can make all these like giant animals out of. So like, I think it was a right creative decision to kind of like lean away from Predator and just do big animal. Mm-hmm. So then even if it was like something that was like a big herbivore, like it could have some sort of elemental power that would make them dangerous regardless. Mm-hmm. But we wanted them to look big and powerful and magical and like just kind of otherworldly. It came about like really on that, like we didn't even know that if the magic that we were presenting them possessing was like a literal magic or if the animal folk were simply perceiving them to be scarier than they were. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I love the direction we ended up in. I think like just making them elementals and, sort of pairing with game design really early on led to some like really interesting designs for the final card set.
Yeah. And they ended up really cool. Okay. Next, topic for you is, so one of the goals that was really early on is Magic is doing a lot of experimentation. We've done a lot of worlds that are pushing in different directions. And that one of the guidelines for this world was, hey, we want to kind of reclaim fantasy. We haven't done a straight up sort of high fantasy set. Let's make this a high fantasy set. So what were the challenges of capturing the animal world but still being high fantasy?
I always like Magic best when it kind of has like at least some form of high fantasy in it. Like I grew up with like Ice Age as my first set. So like I definitely have that like ingrained in my blood that like Magic has to have a certain look and feel. I think it's more a case of like, how do we make this not look like a cartoon or too cutesy? Like how do we retain that Magic the Gathering feeling? So it had to have like a certain level of like danger that came across in the cards more than anything else. Like we could do high fantasy, but we wanted to make sure that it didn't just land in the same sort of like lighthearted space as Eldraine. Mm-hmm. So to me, like looking at the work I did on like Adventures in the Forgotten Realms was actually a big driving factor. Just like having these animals form like adventuring parties and just like creating a sense of adventure in that way where like, yes, it feels very high fantasy, but you also have this like element of danger that you don't normally would associate with tiny animals.
Okay. The other thing that you talked about early on, I'm curious to get a little more, we talked about scope, the idea that just the nature of the world around this world was very different. You know, I mean, even though all the things we saw were things that actually exist in actual nature, not at the scope that you're normally used to. So what were the challenges of sort of, you know, having giant blades of grass and like, how did you make, I'm sort of curious how you got that visual look.
A lot of it was like the scale on the physical, like the physics of the elemental things more than the actual like trees and things. But it was like a lot of like low camera angles or setting things like as an animal would see them, like, but like as if you're looking at a scene through a blade of grass or something like that. Mm-hmm. I tried to team with Neil to make sure that like a lot of the art descriptions were written as if you were watching like a nature show where like they take like shots through trees and like up through water and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, it was just like mostly changing the scale of like the actual magic is like fire is going to behave entirely differently at a small scale than it would large. Like you're just going to get like big tongues of flame and only like one versus like many little ones.
Yeah, one of the things that's been really nice is the audience is really just the look and feel of the set. It's just been super, super popular. And there's something, like the one thing that's nice is, it's nice when we go to a world that just has its own sort of feel to it, but it feels very self-contained within it. Like nothing about, the world feels very natural, even though we've never seen it before.
Yeah, I can't wait to go back, honestly. Like, I don't necessarily even think we need to, like, stick to the same biome the next time. Neil did a great job of, like, making sure that there were little tidbits that there is a world beyond Valley. Like, this could be potentially a very large, expansive plane with, like, lots of things to explore. And I think that's going to lead to a lot of, like, really, like, a creative gold mine later, basically.
Yeah, no, it's a very expansive world, and it's really cool. So we have a little bit of time left. So I'm sort of curious, is there any aspect that you really enjoyed in the art direction that we haven't touched upon yet? What anything that you did that are like, oh, this is a really cool part of making the visual look of Bloomburrow?
The constructs. Like, it was early on that we realized that, like, animal folk were not going to ride other animals in any way, shape, or forms, but we still wanted, like, knights riding on things and stuff like that. So, like, a lot of the visual solves we had to do for what they were going to ride on in each of the animal folks' case was definitely my fun, the part that I found the most fun, just because of how much of a visual problem-solving thing it had to be.
So what were the challenges of doing constructs? Like, what were the challenges?
Part of it was winning over game design because it was something that like wasn't necessarily built into the set. It was like, well, if we present these things, like, do we need cards for them? But yeah, it was like each of the animal folk are different sizes too. So it's like each one would potentially have a different solve to the thing that they would ride in. Like the raccoons got these like mobile living hedges that they would sit inside. Like when you see a whole raccoon family sticking out of a tree trunk and stuff like that. And then, like, mice got, like, little wicker constructs that they would ride on. Yeah, it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it turned out great. Well, anyway, I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's always fun to talk art, and I know the audience really, every time I have an artist on, they really enjoy hearing all, like, I talk a lot about design, so it's fun to talk about just other aspects. So, thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So anyway, to everybody else, I can see my desk. So we all know what that means. It means this is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. So once again, thanks for being with us, and I'll see all of you guys next time. Bye-bye.